My wife has left me again.
Again?
Yeah. So,
is she coming back this time, or what's the situation?
Well, I hope so.
Right.
You know, she says...
You expect her to?
She hasn't said she wouldn't, but she has left me.
It's interesting, isn't it, when you say she hasn't actually said she's not coming back. Obviously, on the one hand, I listen to you say that and I think, you know, you're kind of a bit of a lunatic, because obviously she's coming back. If she wasn't going to come back, she would have said something. But then it got me thinking, would she have? Like, for example, when your dad didn't come back, did he tell you he wasn't going to? Or did he just not come back and never really mention it?
Well, you know, the divorce was never really discussed with us kids. It was very much, it all happened behind closed doors. We were shuttled off to a boarding school for 2 years and then
rah, rah.
Came back to secondary school and my parents had separated.
Wow, wow.
Yeah. Wow, wow. What happened? And it was just, it was kind of, you know, put the puzzle together. It's why I love Memento. I love putting puzzles together of what could possibly be going on. Of what could possibly be going
on. And I like the idea also that you like this notion of a man moving backwards in time, as though your dad might sort of come back to you.
Yeah.
Like if Christopher Nolan was directing the story of your life, that he'd direct it backwards and at the end...
Daddy would come back.
Yeah.
But I think that's just how they did things back in the 80s. He disappeared. But you know, he didn't vanish. He just went off to live somewhere else and set up another family.
Yeah.
That's why I've loved Fight Club, because there's a line in that where Brad Pitt talks about his father going off to set up another family, like a franchise.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. Oh, I wish I had an imaginary friend who'd have my experience and could kind of break me out of my funk.
Yeah.
And I could get into like Project Mayhem and rediscover my manhood. Yeah. But here we are.
Very real.
You've tried to give up smoking and it's not going so well, and you're down in the dumps as well, aren't you?
Well, hang on. Let me pick you up on a little bit of something there, Richmond. I haven't tried to quit smoking. I have quit smoking, okay? I have done that. Obviously, I have tried as part of doing it, but I have done it. And is it going so well? What would you measure success? This is a real question. What would you measure success on for someone quitting smoking?
If they'd had a cigarette or not.
So if I haven't had a cigarette, what would you say it's not going very well?
If you've not been smoking, then it's going very well.
Do you want to start you a little bit again then?
Well, I just said you've tried to give up smoking.
Yeah. No, I haven't tried. I have given up smoking. And you said it wasn't going very well. But I've just checked with about what definitions and terms you would describe. The one bit that's not going very well is I'm a bit irritable.
Right.
Emotionally, I'm a bit irritable. That's maybe not going there. Or maybe,
right.
And as I've said to my wife several times over the last week, maybe this is my new personality, babe. Maybe you better get used to me. I'm a gunslinger now, okay? I used to bite my tongue. Old Joe used to bite his tongue back in the day. Not now. New Joe doesn't bite anything. He just swallows his food whole, okay?
When have you ever bitten your tongue around me? You're constantly in my craw.
Oh my God. Every day.
Okay, I meant, yeah, you're right. But yeah, it's not going emotionally well for you, because the patches are creating patches.
What happened is I quit smoking like a sort of normal, rational person by using nicotine patches. Now, these are they're sort of unusual things for those who haven't used them, because they're actually quite uncomfortable. They can create a little bit of a skin reaction, and a little bit of one is normal. And I was wearing them for about a month. So I haven't smoked for a month, by the way. And I was wearing these patches for about a month and everything was fine. A little bit of reaction here and there. And then all of a sudden, about 5 days ago, I took a patch off at night and the exact sort of outline of it on my skin was just deep red. And I thought, that doesn't look that good. But I woke up the next day and put another one on, obviously.
It's the beginning of a David Cronenberg movie.
It's the beginning of a David Cronenberg. Yeah, it's called The Patch. It's where I get in one pod and then the nicotine patch gets in the other. And then for the rest of the film, I'm stuck to an addict just picking at their skin to try and cause an allergic reaction so that I can free myself. It was panned at the...
panned at Cannes.
It was panned at Cannes. Yeah, no one... The standing ovation only lasted for 43 minutes, so it didn't, obviously it didn't work at all.
Wow, that's a very highbrow joke for a man such as you. That tells me everything. That tells me that you read about Cannes, but you don't really know anything beyond, you know, what actually went on at Cannes.
I've seen a few TikTok videos. That's what that tells you, yeah. But yes, suffice to say, I'm a little bit of a gunslinger. And if I say anything today that upsets you or is just want to get that in there.
Yeah.
I'm also a bit mental, manic. I've got very loose lips. Can't shut up. So you're going to have to interrupt me at times.
Really? I'm not good at that, though. I don't like doing that at all.
I'm sure
I don't want to criticise, Joe, but for this past month where you've been on the nicotine patches, aren't you supposed to, in that process, wean yourself off it by lowering the dosage? So why have you just been giving yourself the full dosage? Double dosage.
I was following the programme. The programme works like this. For 8 weeks, you take the full dosage, and then for two, you take the half, and then for another two, you take the lowest one, and then you're off, right? You're supposed to wean it down over that period of time. What happened was I took full dosage for 4 weeks and then just immediately went to zero.
Right.
And as a result, I hate you and everyone in my life.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to the host. And Joe prefers to the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Hi.
Hi. Oh.
Hi.
Hi.
How's it going? Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast. With me, your host, Adam Richmond. This is the show in which we chat about movies or films. Sometimes we talk about films. Movies that we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. And by we, I mean me and my co-host, Mr. Joe Devine. Here he is. He's a bit cranky.
Arr.
And I'm a bit lonely.
Cranky and lonely.
Cranky and lonely.
It's like every character ever played by Jim Carrey, isn't it?
No.
Not ever, but like in his more dramatic
career. No, you said that, and now let's go through in our heads. Yeah. Every single character is cranky and lonely. Or lonely.
Liar, liar. Yes.
He's lonely.
He's cranky as well.
He's okay.
Ace Ventura. Pet detective.
Neither cranky or lonely. But that's the outlier because that's his first thing. The Mask. Lonely.
Lonely.
Dumb and Dumber.
Oh.
Lonely.
Cranky at various points within that film. He's quite cranky and lonely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bruce Almighty.
Definitely lonely because Jennifer Aniston leaves him. Cranky, yes. He's actually furious in that film. A lot of the time.
Eternal Sunshine.
Yes. Cranky and lonely. Very cranky in there. What about Kick-Ass 2?
Doesn't really count because it's kind of a cameo.
Yeah, okay. The number 23?
Cranky and lonely.
Big time. I think, listen, you know.
Yeah, no, do you know what?
The Majestic?
Neither. That was him trying to be serious. And Truman Show?
I mean, lonely, I guess existentially so.
Yeah.
But he's never cranky and that's part of the charm.
Hello, good morning, good evening and good night. If I don't see you... Is it that? Something like that, isn't it?
It's something like that. He says, hello, good morning, good evening and good night if I don't see you. And then he just walks out that door that they built in the side of the thing.
Oh,
imagine being so stupid that you didn't realise you were on TV. I mean, I know I'm on TV. You presumably know you're on TV, right? All people here are assuming, before they knew the the concept of... this film, everyone always believed that they're the center of the universe. That's why the film struck a chord. That's one of the reasons why it was successful. I'm here walking around thinking I'm definitely on TV. You're thinking that yourself, even if you won't admit it now. Everyone in the audience of the Truman Show is thinking it. And what? Sorry, Truman's he's the one guy in the world who's not thinking it. What an idiot.
It's not the world, is it? It's a fiction within, it's a big bubble, and they've made it so that he wouldn't think that. He does think he's an entertainer, why he draws soap on the mirror and imagines he's on TV.
That's true. Yeah.
That's what Jim Carrey used to do that. He used to do that thing with the mirror.
Did he?
Yeah, and that's why it's in the film.
I don't think I do that. I think I incessantly babble to myself. Like, I'll be walking around the house like an elderly person.
I think
going,
it's pronounced Babel. You're Babel to yourself. Yeah? That is different languages.
That's a shit and deep cut right there. Do you not ever think, though...
You are on the edge today. You would have let that pass in any other time.
Do you not think... Do you never think, though, when something happens in your life, you think, you know, Christ alive, I must be dreaming. This is a joke now. This obviously isn't real. And at some point I've died or fallen asleep. And this isn't happening. Do you know what I mean? That feeling of great sort of disassociation, great surreality, the notion that your life is real and is happening in front of you can't be true. Do you never experience that?
Never, no. On today's show, talking about grips on reality, we're doing the 2020 sci-fi parochial Brit sci-fi flick.
Yeah.
Never Let Me Go, directed by Mark Romanek, scripted by Alex Garland.
Lest we forget.
By Kazu Ishiguro, based on the book of the same name. It's not called By Kazu Ishiguro. It's called Never Let Me Go. Joe's not even... He doesn't even feed how much I've fucked that up.
I was thinking about it.
Yeah, fuck it. Get back on the fags. These students have everything they need, except time. As children, Kathy, Ruth and Tommy spend their childhood at an idyllic and secluded English boarding school. As they grow into adults, they must come to terms with the complexity and strength of their love for one another, while also preparing for the haunting reality awaiting them. Now it stars...
Keira Knightley, Kerry Mulligan...
Oh, you're doing it, are you now?
Andrew Garfield,
Sally Hawkins,
Charlotte Rampling,
Domhnall Gleeson,
and Andrea Riseborough.
Oh, it's got a young Ella Purnell, who was featured in that telly show Fallout.
Oh, yeah.
She plays a young Keira Knightley. She's a good young Keira Knightley. We'll talk about the film, and fundamentally why the film's not very good is because the first half an hour or 40 minutes is with the shittest child stars you can imagine.
Right.
And it really hampers the film. Really hampers the film. It's really...
It's tricky, isn't it?
It's a slow, long, boring start.
Yeah.
To a film. And I see why they've started that, because that's what happens in the book.
That's what happens at the beginning. Of course, there are better directors, like Greta Gerwig, who would see that and then create an incredible sort of series of flashbacks and flash-forwards to account for it. But... you know, Mark Romanek is no Greta Gerwig, right? That's just established by now.
It is, but then maybe it's also at fault with Alex Garland's screenplay.
Well, I didn't want to say Alex Garland's no Greta Gerwig because I didn't want to start a fight, but, you know, I was thinking it. Can you imagine his Barbie?
Yeah, it would be amazing.
Barbie would not be real, right? Barbie would be, when she realised that she didn't have any sex organs, she would realise that she was actually made of synthetic material and she would have to trace her steps back to the factory. Could it be that sort of thing? Could it be a kind of like a horror Toy Story sort of vibe?
Well, he's already done it. He's made Ex Machina and that's his Barbie.
Right, yeah.
So, but that's how clever you are. You've kind of imagined the film he's already made and just given it a different name.
It sounds like you're saying I'm not clever when you say that, but you have said that's how clever you are. So, thanks?
But this film screams out for flashbacks. You know, start with the mold.
Yeah.
You know, it starts with voiceover with Carey Mulligan. I mean, the only people who are listening to this episode are the people who've either read the book or seen the film. So we can give it away, right? It's about...
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's set in a very British, countryside-y type 1950s... Well, actually, maybe it's the 1990s? It feels like it's kind of set in the past.
It is set in the past. They say that there's the discovery of this is shortly post-war, but then it's not clear when the film itself is set. They just sort of base the setting in this. It's definitely in the 20th century, so it's anywhere up to the year 2000. I think is the idea. Could be the 90s. Could be the 70s or 80s.
Yeah, a pre-internet 90s.
Yes, yes.
So they're growing kids, clones of kids. Not clones of kids, they're just growing clones, and the clones will grow up, and at some point when they're older, they will have to give up their lives and their organs to be donated to real humans.
Kazuo Ishiguro's contention with this is that although there are obviously some pretty horrendous human rights issues involved, because after, you know, two or three donations, the clones start to die, that humanity doesn't want to vote to go back to a time pre these obvious cures for cancer or diabetes or, you know, any of these other diseases, ailments, whatever. That's his idea that would happen. And also very important to note, I think, because this is something that sort of I repeatedly confused about. I always used to think, and I think I thought the first time I watched this, that they were all, you know, direct clones of specific people. And when their specific person needed one of their organs, they would get it, because that sci-fi has sort of existed before. That's not the case here, right?
No, and that's the plot of the film The Island, directed by Michael Bay and starring Ewan McGregor and Scarlett Johansson.
Sure.
Watching Never Let Me Go kind of made me yearn to be watching The Island.
Right.
I remember us talking and arguing about Minority Report, and you pulled its pants down about like the nature of the sci-fi. Like, you could nitpick Never Let Me Go to death, right?
Yeah. If you had the technology to create these humans, then could you not, like, presumably somewhere along the way you would have found the technology to create, I don't know, lab-grown organs, or to farm them in some other way? Or you also would assume that there would be far more inexpensive ways of doing this. This must be the most expensive kind of healthcare possible. Also, I understand, obviously, this was written, you know, back in the 20th century, when there was still some sort of hope about the continued growth of capitalism and the economic security of the West. But one of the biggest issues with the health service in the UK, for example, is how meaningfully underfunded it is. I can't begin to imagine a world where this is a realistic outcome. I think the reason that it is forgivable, and why I don't feel the instant need to nitpick it, is because it's not really a sci-fi film. It's just sort of, it's a sci-fi concept. It's sci-fi, you know, by conceit, but it's not by genre. And so therefore I don't really feel, the film says to me, this is how it is, and now we're going to explore something about how it is that isn't really, you know, the sci-fi elements are purely background. They're not really functions of the story.
I think we have completely different ideas of what sci-fi is, because I think that's the essence of, even if it doesn't look like a sci-fi, it is, because the sci-fi of it is the thing that raises the questions about whatever the situation is. And why it's so outdated is it's asking the questions and ethics of cloning and how we treat clones and who's a person and who's not a person. And it's taking a sci-fi idea, and then it's using, that's the prism whereby then it asks those questions. So, I mean, again, I'm wary that you haven't got your patches on, and I don't want to... Christ. Hello.
Hi, is that Adam Richmond?
Yes, speaking.
Hi, this is Kenneth Jenkinson. I'm the secretary for the South London Sci-Fi Association. I'm just checking in to see if you'd like
Ken.
To... Hi, thank you.
Can I call you Ken?
That's absolutely fine. Yeah, you can.
Jenkins?
My mother calls me Ken.
Does anyone call you Jenkins?
One or two people around the office, but, you know, not sort of... It's a bit informal for me. So...
But Ken's fine.
Ken's fine, yeah. What about you? Should I call you Ads or
no? Please, Mr. Richmond.
Mr. Richmond. Okay, Mr. Richmond. Well, anyway, I was just calling to inquire as to whether you'd like to renew your membership with us, because obviously it does expire. I'm not sure if you're aware, in a couple of months' time.
To the what? Who are you the steward of?
The secretary of the South London Sci-Fi Club.
Right.
I'm a bit surprised you're unaware of your membership. It is quite expensive, and I note that you did pay your full fees 10 months ago of £850.
Why are you calling me? I've got a podcast I'm recording. I'm chatting about sci-fi.
Well, I'm calling you to see if you want to renew. Well,
I don't know.
Well, if you'd like, I can go through some of the incentives, some of the disincentives. Of course, some of the things you'll no longer be allowed to talk about if you don't renew.
I didn't realise that's what I was paying for.
Well, that's what you've signed up for. And actually, it makes a little bit more sense. I hadn't quite categorised you correctly as a customer in my database. But now that I know you haven't attended any of the events, I can see that you're actually signed up just so that you can officially say you know what you're talking about. So let me remind you that if you are to let your membership lapse, you R2-D2. Will be banned from...
R2-D2, yeah. Can I make Star Wars jokes?
That is, as you know, that's a space opera, Mr. Richmond. Not,
oh, well done. You
passed. Not a sci-fi.
I was just checking you weren't trying to fish me.
Don't test me, Mr. Richmond. I'm the secretary of the club. I'll test you. I will only test you if you renew your membership. You won't be able to say formally that you have any right to or hold any responsibility and ideas and the expression of the reality of sci-fi, just to be absolutely clear. So I know a note here that you do have a podcast where you it is your want currently as a paying member to say that you understand, and we won't challenge that. But I do have to warn you that you will be aggressively challenged if you let your subscription wane, Mr. Richmond.
I mean, I just don't think I need it anymore. I've done the reading. I've read my Philip K. Dicks. I've read my Ursula Le Guin's, you know, and I do like to call her Le Guin, and I don't care who calls me out on it.
No, that's actually her name, Mr. Richmond. I
yeah, no, as you used to say,
Le Guin. That's on your record here, but no, you've been corrected because of your membership in the club to Le Guin. Well done.
So yeah, I'm finally getting some my dues back.
How many Ursula Le Guins have you read, Mr. Richmond?
Oh, a good couple. I mean,
two?
Sci-fi wise, I just don't read anymore. I just don't care.
Maybe it's right that you do let your subscription lapse. We don't want people like you in the club, bringing our name down, dragging our name through the mud, that you understand sci-fi, but then just proceeding to talk only about films, as though that has anything to do with what sci-fi is.
Yeah, no, you've really set me straight. I won't have opinions or say anything about sci-fi again.
Well, you can for the next 2 months, but then you have to stop.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, see you later, Ken.
Thanks, Mr. Richmond. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. What was that?
Just some douchebag. People don't seem to agree with what my view of sci-fi is.
Before the phone rang, I was about to tell you that I think that's really true, and I actually agree.
A long time ago, I was in Burma. My friends and I were working for the local government. They were trying to buy the loyalty of tribal leaders by bribing them with precious stones. But their caravans were being raided in a forest north of Rangoon by a bandit. So we went looking for the stones. But in 6 months, we never met anyone who traded with him. One day, I saw a child playing with a ruby the size of a tangerine. The bandit had been throwing them away.
So why steal it?
Well, because he thought it was good sport, because some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burst.
And you merely observe that as the reader, and you wish for them to act at any point to respond. When you read Remains of the Day, you wish for, what's his name, the character, for not Williams, Stevens. You wish for Stevens to act. You think, God, grab her face, give her a kiss, lad. You know, get in there, she wants it. Every time I watch that film, I'm like, Anthony, just grab her. You know, and he never does, and it becomes an exercise in sort of frustrated, staid observation that you watch these sad, quiet characters stay sad and quiet in the face of an opportunity to do something else. That none of tell you what it is, they're all like non-rebellious. None of them rebel against their situation.
I tell you what it is. It's the difference between watching Emma Thompson and Sir Anthony Hopkins and Carey Mulligan and Andrew Garfield. In comparison, they just don't have it.
Yeah, I'll tell you what it is. It's the difference between two generations of actors. Some that are some of the greatest of all time. Others that could turn into that in the future, but don't have the chops yet. Right?
No, I'll tell you what it is. It's two actors. It's Sir Anthony Hopkins and Emma Thompson who watch. You can see this inner turmoil. You can actually see the turmoil.
Yeah.
And you can see them wrestling with it.
That's right. I'll tell you what it is.
No, wait a minute. Oh, I still haven't told you what it is.
Sorry, tell me what it is first.
And then I'm watching Carey Mulligan, Knightley, and your man Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I see them not doing anything, okay? They're not wrestling at all. They are just playing flat and they're playing like no emotion. I don't see any roiling depths.
No.
And there's no... Is the script to blame? I worry the script is to blame, and I worry as a Garland guy that Garland hasn't put it on the page.
I was going to say,
I think he's on
it. I tell you what it is.
Wait, you don't.
Are you still telling me what it is?
I know. Sorry,
you've been telling me what it is for so long. Let me tell you what it is, because this is a game of tennis, and in a minute you'll be able to tell me again what it is. Okay. Split your bits up into. Come on, man.
I'm sorry. I've got no sense of.
This is who I am now. I'm a gunslinger. Okay, and I'm gonna tell you what it is.
Tell me what it is.
Alex Garland.
Fuck off.
Hasn't got it, mate.
In this film,
Alex Gut. No, do you know what this is? I'll tell you what this is. This is an example of a script, a screenplay, where I look at it and I think, oh, this is all the pieces are in the right place here. And this is actually, there's so much to admire about this. It's delicately done. There's a really interesting idea. And on paper, this seems like something that's artistic and has merit and has value. And then when they made it, it just kind of goes,
I'll tell you what it is.
What is it?
I'll tell you what it is. It's Alex Garland.
What is it?
It's respect. He's respected the material.
Right, yeah.
He's been told to respect the material because it's Kazuo Ishiguro, and he fundamentally should have ripped it to shreds. It should have been told all over, like chopping backwards, forwards in time. There's just no dramatic, like, thrill or urgency in any of the scenes. There's barely any dialogue. And call me a mainstream cunt, but I want some juicy dialogue. I want something, man. Build to something.
I agree. I tell you what it is, actually. Let me tell you what it is, okay?
Tell me what it is. Tell me what it is.
In this film, you've mentioned it already, there's Spider-Man's in this film. He's not Spider-Man yet, but he will be. And then in Remains of the Day, there's a better superhero, which is Christopher Reeve, you know, playing the American owner of the home in the new times. He was Superman, you know, before he fell off that horse. Hey, do you want to play Best Me Bacon?
Yeah, yep.
We got an email from someone called Richard Fawcett.
Oh, okay. Like the tap?
Like the tap. Fawcett.
Richard Fawcett. Why did he Fawcett?
Richard Fawcett writes in and says, "Hi, guys. Please, please, please beat my bacon. Many thanks. Richard, P.S. I like the new name that you have for that Connect the Axes game that you do. Now, you'll remember last week, Adam, I did say we would only call it Beat My Bacon as opposed to Best Me Bacon.
Best Me Bacon.
If people wrote in and said that they wanted it. Now, Richard Fawcett is the only person to write in.
Christ.
The only person is one man named Richard Fawcett.
Well, I just want to say, like, I think for our international listeners, I think if you were to say to someone, "Best me,
yeah,
bacon," they'd go, "What?"
Right.
But if you said, "Beat my," that's just like an
beat my bacon
challenge.
They'd start to masturbate you.
They would say, "Oh, you want me to beat something?" As like a,
you want me to beat you off?
Look, if more people need to write in...
5 emails.
I was going to say 5-2. We're so on the same page.
You were going to say 52?
I was going to say 5.
Oh, 5.
God. Well, your dad joke. Lovely dad joke. Well done. Hats off.
Doesn't even have any kids, buddy. Don't even have any kids. Also, quick one to say, thanks to Victor, Luke, Bobby and Ben for some lovely communal list additions. They'll get straight on there, and some other fine email forcer.
Yeah, and people have been sending in top Trump's additionals, and we'll probably chat about them in a future Top Trumps. Not the next one, because we've already recorded that, but...
Hey, quick hit, by the way. One of these fine people that emailed in, they said something very funny. They said for ages they were trying to find you on Letterboxd and they couldn't because they were from America and they thought that your name was Era of Ways.
But that's sad.
That is sad, isn't it? So should you say now for any other Americans listening that are desperate to follow you on Letterboxd or on Instagram that you're saying error of ways, E-R-R-O-R, not error of ways.
Error. I'm error of ways. No, error, as in mistake. Error. E-R-R-O-R of ways.
Error.
But I'm also back on Instagram, so you can also follow me. At Error of Ways. And you can send us your suggestions for movies you forgot. moviesyouforgotyouforgot@gmail.com.
Okay, well, the two actors that I gave you just before the podcast started, Adam, were Andrew Garfield from today's film and Elijah Wood, everybody's second favourite Hobbit. Yeah. Or maybe possibly third.
Who's your favourite?
Samwise, that's everybody's favourite.
So who's besting my bacon today?
Well, besting your bacon is going to be me, hopefully. Now, the fun thing about this game is that Adam has to find movie connections between these two actors. He doesn't have to get the shortest possible route. He just has to beat my route. But the fun thing is that he doesn't know my route until he's told me his. So, Adam, over to you. How are you going to get yourself from Andrew Garfield to Elijah Wood?
You'd think it would be difficult.
I thought it was.
You'd think it would be easy.
Oh, that's what I thought. It sounded easy, but I was hoping that it wouldn't be.
But it is easy.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it is.
What have you got?
I think as soon as you kind of crack Elijah Wood, like when you think Elijah Wood, you go straight to Lord of the Rings, and I think that sort of sends you down like a Lord of the Rings cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
And you just don't want to spend any time down there. So then, you know, I'm sort of thinking, oh, Andrew Garfield, as spoken about, he's in Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
And maybe you could think about this one, like Mulligan. But I'm thinking, okay, he's in Amazing Spider-Man and he's with Emma Stone. Okay, I've got Emma Stone.
Yeah.
So as soon as I've got her, I'm like, okay, Elijah Wood, Lord of the Rings. And then it's like, oh, fuck Lord of the Rings. Elijah Wood is in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah.
And we all know who's in that as well.
The other Mary Jane.
No, Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, Mark Ruffalo's in it.
And Ruffalo is proven to be my bacon key of choice.
Ruffalo's your Gruffalo here.
He's meaty. He's in Poor Things with Emma Stone.
Yeah, so it's a three.
And then it's game over.
It's a three. Yeah.
It's a three.
No, that's good. So basically, you solved it in the same sort of way that I did, but you did it better than me. I got four. I also did the Lord of the Rings thing, and I was like, hang on a second, let's go Eternal Sunshine, right? That way, we're going to trick Adam. I'm going to lose Adam down the Lord of the Rings pathway. Meanwhile, I'm sneaking out via Jim Carrey through Dumb and Dumber to Jeff Daniels.
Yes, tell me more. I love it.
Who's in The Squid and the Whale with Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
Who's in The Social Network with Andrew Garfield. And I thought, that's nice. Hey. That's a nice route. It's a four.
That's really nice. But that's a lovely route. I always love your routes.
Thanks. Well, they're a reflection of how my brain works, I suppose. And you love my brain, don't you?
Yeah, sure.
You don't feel comfortable saying it?
I don't think I'd love your brain.
Really?
Because, well, I fear it, sure.
Fear and love are, you know, lowercase sci-fi.
I worry about it.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if
you and the doctor.
Who's Ewan?
He's my friend Ewan McGregor. He's a doctor.
Oh, Christ. I hope this isn't... Hello?
Hello.
Sorry, hello, is that... Hello?
Oh, sorry, I had something in my throat. Hello?
Sorry, hello, this is Ewan.
Well, that's so weird, because this is Ewan as well. You're Ewan, aren't you?
You're Ewan. No, I'm Ewan.
Yeah, I'm Ewan. Yeah. Yeah. Who are you?
You're I'm Ewan. Hello, I'm Ewan.
You hang on. You're Ewan or I'm Ewan?
Hello, my name, I'm Ewan.
You're Ewan, yeah. You're Ewan. Oh, that's so funny because I'm Ewan Tooan. I mean, I'm Ewan too.
Sorry, I'm Ewan too? Mr. I'm Ewan too?
No, maybe I'm Ewan one, I don't know. Are you Ewan two or?
Sorry, I can't, you've called Ewan.
Yeah, no, that makes Ewan. Sense. Yeah, and I'm calling you.
Who are you?
No, Ewan.
You're called No Ewan. You said I'm Ewan.
No, I am. My name is Ewan. And yours.
Your name is Ewan.
Yeah. And Ewan Tooan, right? You know?
My name is Ewan. Isn't that fun? Sorry, there's a real silly misunderstanding.
No, that's fine.
So you're Ewan and I'm Ewan.
Yeah, what's your surname?
Tooan.
Right, that explains the next bit of it. Yeah.
Right. So what's your surname?
No, mine's Tooan too.
So you're Ewan Tooan too?
No, I'm just...
You're Ewan Tooan too?
No, I guess I am Ewan Tooan too, but I'm just Ewan Tooan as well.
Oh, so when you say okay, because every time you say something, I think like you're adding something, but you're not, are you?
No,
I need to stop doing that.
Well, okay. I mean, I wasn't sure because... Ewan Tooan doesn't sound like a real name, so anything could be in there. It's like it's really hard to know what might be. Right, let's just I'll call you sir and you call me mister. Okay.
Okay, why are you calling mister?
Well, I was hoping to buy 4 candles.
Talk about Mulligan. I don't think she's got it, and I don't think Garfield's got it. Like
film or in general.
In general, I don't think she's got it.
Whoa!
I just don't think she's got it, and I don't think he's got it. Knightley is as 'twas ever Knightley as ever Knightley was. She's not very good in this. She doesn't get enough to do, but she's already done Pirates. She's done The Duchess, I think.
She's done Atonement.
So she's the poster star for this. Garfield and Mulligan are both on the ups. I think Mulligan's done An Education. Garfield's done some telly. So they're popping. But Mulligan and Garfield, aside from a couple of... aside from Shame for Mulligan and Tick, Tick, Boom for Andrew Garfield... I just don't think anything of them.
Right.
They're not stars.
Well, let's look at Mulligan. I kind of agree with you about Garfield, and I think if Garfield hadn't become Spider-Man and then dated Emma Stone, that he wouldn't really be a fixture.
Horror Tim would always say about Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
He would bemoan the loss to indie filmmaking, you know, Garfield, not all the films that Garfield couldn't have been in because he was Spider-Man.
Mm.
And I never really said it to him, but we didn't lose anything.
I don't think we did either. If anything, I think we gained something. Like that guy wasn't in some films that are probably quite good because he wasn't in them. You know?
I'd love... No, that's the game. We don't have to play.
What are the films?
What are the films that Garfield... that we dodged the Garfield bullet because he was in Spider-Man?
Okay. I've got this for you. Hold on. We're going to work it out this way, right? I'm going to go to Garfield, and every year that he is in a big movie, we're going to look at our favourite indie films of that year and see what he might have made worse. Or maybe he would have made them better. Who's to say? He could have.
Yeah,
and there are things he was good in as well, you know. He was good in Silence. That was okay. Right, okay. He was obviously in 2010, the same year as Never Let Me Go. He was in The Social Network. He came out of nowhere, man. He did The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which in 2009, the year before Never Let Me Go, which was the last film that Heath Ledger was in. And then it also had Colin Farrell and Johnny Depp or whatever, because or Jude Law, I can't remember, because what's his face died.
Yeah, they stepped in to finish it. Tried watching that. Horrible.
But before that, like you said, he'd done a lot of TV. Then he did Never Let Me Go, and then he did The Social Network in the same year. I don't know how. I'm sure there's a reason. I mean, there definitely will be a reason because it happened. Then he became Spider-Man in 2014. So there's only 2 years between the film we're talking about now and The Amazing Spider-Man. They've got to strike young.
Well, that's the character, Joe.
That's the character, yeah. 2012 indie movies. Let's look up some 2012 indie movies, okay? What could he have been in? Could he have been in Sightseers?
No.
All right, well then 2012 was fine because there weren't any other British indie movies. So not only is Tim wrong, you're wrong as well. We are, because...
what about 2013?
Well, 2014, there were big indie movies. Could he have played Domhnall Gleeson's character in Ex Machina?
Yeah.
And would he have made the film worse?
Yes.
Okay, there you go. That's 1 point to Adam.
Yes.
Horror Tim is down a point. Mr. Turner, a fantastic film from 2014. He could have showed up in that as your guy from the past. He wouldn't have had an impact on the film, though, because Timothy Spall's performance was so strong. You know what he would have been in 2014, Adam?
What?
He would have been in Pride.
He would have been in Pride.
If he wasn't in Spider-Man, he 100% would have been in Pride.
He would have been what's that guy? The guy with the big face, George McKay. He would have been the George McKay character.
He would have been the George McKay character, the main character.
Stunk up the joint.
I think he would have stunk up the joint big time. Big time.
This is my favorite game we've ever played.
Okay, now let's keep playing it. Right, that was 2014. Next up, Hacksaw Ridge 2016. That's a big movie. If you don't remember it, maybe you'll remember it as the one.
Garfield in that.
Yeah. Get him in that. Get him in that. That's fine. Get him in that.
That's the kind. Oh, wait a minute. He is in that.
He is in that. Okay. But because he was in that, could he have been in 2016's Lady Macbeth on the BFI player? You can watch it on the BFI player now. Maybe yes. With Florence Pugh?
No, too small a cast.
Too small a cast? Yeah.
No, I don't think he's getting... That's such a small out of... That's too small for Garfield at this point. So.
Sure. Could he have been in that terrible film Sing Street?
No.
No? And could he have been in American Honey?
Oh, do you know what? Maybe.
He could have been in American Honey.
He could have. That's the kind of thing he would have been sniffing around for credibility.
He would have been... Look, with Shia LaBeouf, please put me in one of your, you know... Two long movies, that sort of thing.
Andrea.
Yeah. He was also in Silence as well in 2016. Then we've got other movies. He's literally in a film in 2020 called Mainstream. To be fair, after that, after Silence in 2016, he kind of just disappears until he comes back in Tick, Tick, Boom, which I haven't seen. And we've given him a tough time, haven't we, here today. I keep seeing clips on TikTok for We Live in Time. That was very popular, it seemed. That was a film with Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh. Interestingly, you know, one other thing I wanted to talk to you about, and I've just noticed I'm slipping into host mode, so I'm not going to do it.
No, do it, please.
You sure I can do it?
Because I don't like this film and I don't want to say anything about it.
All right, well, maybe after a jingle, I'd love to talk to you about how this was an incredible generation of actors, and I wonder who the next that they are now. Well, I think this was an incredible generation of actors, and I wonder who the next that they are now. You know, Florence Pugh is one of them, right? But if you think about it, really think about it, obviously they're not very good in this film, and I'm not trying to claim that this is a good film or the performances are strong. However...
Keira Knightley.
Yeah.
Carey Mulligan.
Yeah.
Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
Sally Hawkins.
Yeah, Sally Hawkins is a gen up, though. Sally Hawkins isn't in this generation. She's one gen up, I would say.
Okay. Oh, Domhnall Gleeson.
He's there.
And then gen up, you've got Sally Hawkins and Andrea Riseborough.
I think I would count Andrea Riseborough as part of this generation, even though she might be gen up because of when she came to prominence. And I think she's not meaningfully older.
In terms of regard, she was more meaningfully well regarded. But we could lump her in.
Let's lump her in.
Okay. And then gen up, you've got Charlotte Rampling.
Yeah.
You know, quality or not, or like nitpicking, these are all big face name actors. It's a hell of a cast, whoever cast this film.
It's really impressive. So what I was curious about was obviously great cast of people who've gone on to do some terrific things. Whether or not they've really sort of found their niche. I love that, by the way, that we set out to look at Kerry Mulligan's IMDb, and we were completely sidetracked by the only man in the film. sorry about that, everyone. Mm. And I'll say a little bit about that now with Kerry Mulligan, because Kerry Mulligan is evidently an exceptionally talented actor. I'm yet to see her in a film. Like, it's weird because I know that about her, but I'm yet to see her in a film where I go, I think you've done it. I think you've hit your peak. Like, you've done, this is your prime. This is you at the very top of your power, your talent.
So she's not exceptional?
No, she just hasn't shown it yet. I can see it's there. It's like when you hear a new songwriter or a new singer and you think they're a bit young and they've made a few hits and you think, oh, that's really good for where you are. And then, but later you're going to do something that I'm going to think is exceptional. You just haven't done it yet. There's always the chance that they don't. I think in Kerry Mulligan's case, it's, you know, she will.
I don't think she will. No, I think she's missed the boat.
You think she's missed the boat, huh?
I remember seeing her in Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yeah.
She's bad in that film. Her line readings are really bad. She clunks and she clangs in that flick. She's great in Shame. From my memory, I need to rewatch Shame. Time never says, oh yeah, plop Shame on. But Shame for me is the outlier of, like, yeah, she's great. But other than that, she's very good in Education. That's a pretty good debut.
Sure.
But look at her filmography, man. It's thin. Nightly,
let's look
she
at
puts
it.
Herself out there. She's in flicks, and she's in shit, and she's in good stuff. Mulligan kind of disappeared, and she's she never, like, put herself on the blockbuster chopping block, and I don't respect her as a result.
Okay, here's Mulligan. Comes out of nowhere. 2005, Pride and Prejudice. She plays Kitty Bennett. Who's one of the youngest
sisters. She's
rubbish
in that.
She's
so
not
annoying.
Rubbish in that. No, you
she
shut up.
She giggles like a loon.
Because that's what the character does, man. The character's
God,
a giggler.
Austin wrote a shit character.
2007, one of those classically shit British films. And when did you last see your father? In other words, the same text I send to you every morning with a picture of Clive Owen or whoever the fuck is in that film. Not Clive Owen, Colin Firth. One of the Collins, you know? Yeah, anyway, then, you mentioned it already, 2009, and Education. She strikes it big, heads over to Hollywood and does Public Enemies with Johnny Depp. Who wouldn't want to do that? You know?
She's not in that flick at all.
I know.
She's,
but you know
she's
what she is in?
Jimmy, she's in that flick.
No, I know.
For one scene. Oh, what is she in?
But you know what she is in?
Yeah, Never Let Me Go.
Yeah, but one more after that? Bang, Drive.
Yes.
Okay, now tell me.
Okay, that's the turning point.
Is there a better person to sit opposite Ryan Gosling and stand in, like, a slow motion scenes, sort of smiling, you know, oddly at each other? There's no one's done that better with Gozzers.
Emma Stone.
In La La Land.
Emma Stone. Emma Stone. Just Emma Stone any day. All day.
That's probably true. But she's very, very good in that. And then she's exceptional in Shame, which is a good, difficult watch, but a great film.
Yeah, I need to see more of that. I need to see more of her playing a kind of outrageous, on the over-the-edge character.
I thought she was quite good in Saltburn, and I didn't watch Promising Young Woman, but it sounded funny.
Yeah, it's not funny. She's good in it.
Right.
She makes it, I kind of forgot about that film. It's, the payoff of it isn't, I quite, yes, she makes the whole thing work. That film shouldn't really work. And
it does. Okay.
But she should be knocking out a Promising Young Woman flick every year.
Well, that's...
No. Hang on a sec. I'm gonna roll back on that. She did have kids and she's a mother. So I'm holding her to a standard of, like, oh, churn out films like this. And some people, you know, they want to juggle work-life balance is tough.
Yeah.
And so I do admire her in terms of, you know, looking after a family and putting it in that regard. But also at the same time, I need to see more of those films. Because she can get those, I feel like she's a name enough to get that kind of flick made, Promising Young Woman, but
yeah, she clearly is. And also a year later, she was in a film I have seen called The Dig with Ralph Fiennes in which I think she puts in a really good performance. I thought she was good in Saltburn, and I feel a bit sorry for her because the big movie that she was in 2023 was Maestro with Bradley Cooper. Just kind of flopped and bombed at the Oscars, and it retrospectively it seemed like it looked like clear awards bait, or at least that's the way that it kind of presented itself around that time of year. And it didn't work at all, and it was plagued by some criticisms, right? So I think that could have been a film as part of her acting journey where people go, oh, and then she was in Maestro in 2020. You know, it had the potential to be this big colossus in her calendar, in her filmography, but it turned out to be a plop, you know?
It's the Denzel Washington question you asked when we did Inside Man. Like, what's the great flick that this act has been in?
Shame.
That's not great.
Whoa.
I think also like the sci-fi of this Never Let Me Go has also been co-opted by basically Black Mirror.
Yeah.
This is basically a Black Mirror episode.
It's a Black Mirror episode, you're right, yeah.
And it's as shit as all the modern Black Day Mirror episodes are.
Okay, well, some of them are pretty good, let's be honest.
Not the recent ones.
I haven't watched any of the recent ones.
There you go.
I put the first one on about a week ago.
I'm going to let you talk about telly now because I brought up Black Mirror.
Thank you.
Sorry, you're welcome. And
as you'll discover, I'm actually not going to talk about it because this is what happened. I put it on, I watched 2 minutes of it, and then I sort of caught my wife's eye and we both went, yeah, actually, this seems a bit depressing. And we turned it off and we put something better on that was happy.
Yeah, that's the Chris O'Dowd, Rashida Jones one, I bet. And it's super depressing.
Yeah, it seemed depressing. Yeah.
It's deliberately depressing. And I hated it.
Yeah. I didn't want to watch it, so I stopped.
Yeah, Channel 4 Black Mirror. Great.
Great stuff.
Netflix Black Mirror. Nah.
Rubbish.
Rubbish.
America's rubbish, isn't it? Anyway, here's two things. One of them, I've got a little list here of other films that I think are like this film in that they are sci-fi films with big concepts, but they don't always follow all parts of the sci-fi genre. And I think you'll see what I mean when I start to say my list, okay?
Hmm.
The Lobster.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. Her.
Yeah.
My reasoning is that while it is set in a futuristic world where there's AI, the world is never really explored in any meaningful way other than the AI bit of it. And the film is very much about the relationship.
And the sci-fi element.
The fact that she's...
Not real.
Not real, yeah. But of course, that is the same as the fact that these kids are clones. You know, it's like... It's the fundamental reality that shapes their story. You know, that these kids in Never Let Me Go are clones is the thing that catches up with them towards the end of the film. And it's why the film ends in the way that it does. That, to me, is the same as the fact that there's the relationship between Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson in Her is ultimately sort of in some ways blocked by this difference in the way that they exist, you know?
Yeah, I don't want to nitpick. You're sort of right, but... I mean, and this isn't the right or wrong thing, but like he's always talking to a robot, whereas in Never Let Me Go, the conversation of clones it's always removed. They're not ever allowed to because Kazu Ishiguro doesn't want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants characters who refuse to talk about it, whereas Joaquin Phoenix is always going, hello, robot, shall we have sex now?
He sort of, yeah, I mean, kind of, I don't know.
I don't know.
She's not a robot. Million, you know.
Whatever. I saw it a million years ago.
Yeah. What about this one? Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Because it's a sci-fi, right? And in it is this thing that has the ability to take away memories, which is something that doesn't exist now. And the film is a sort of about what would happen if this thing existed. But the film really is about this relationship, this love affair between these two people. And it's not very sci or fi in genre.
What do you mean when you say sci or fi by genre? For me, ipso facto, if there's anything sci or it's all fi. If there's anything sci, then it's sci-fi.
I think you can have fi without sci.
And of course, what do you mean? What? It's all fi because we're talking about fiction.
I think these films are lowercase sci, capital fi. You know, whereas a film
Fi stands for fiction. They're all fiction.
I know Fi stands for fiction. I'm saying, but more like a Marvel film or sort of, I don't know, 2001 A Space Odyssey or something. That's sort of capital Psi, also capital Phi. Yeah.
Okay, I'll take,
whereas
I'll take
these
the
ones are just capital Phi, lowercase Psi.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
I think so.
I think you think Psi and you sort of think spaceships, right?
I know that's what you want me to say.
You said 2001.
Well, no, that was an example.
Okay, well, that was the example you gave. So,
okay,
forgive me.
Annihilation. That's uppercase Psi.
Because
they go into a thing.
Psi is so fantastical, right? It's pure fantasy.
Sure. Yeah. Whereas this Psi is lowercase psi. It's like calling someone a lowercase c conservative, you know?
No, it's because of the aesthetics. It's like, oh, there's not a spaceship.
Listen, mate, No. I'm not letting... No, because I didn't... I knew you were trying to goad me into saying because there's no spaceships in it. So I didn't say that, and you now don't get to do your bit about how I think it's because of spaceships, because that's not what I think, and that's not what I said. And I'm a gunslinger now, okay? I'm gonna call you on this shit. You can't hurt me anymore because I can't smoke the pain away. Okay, so if you say spaceships one more time, then our relationship is over forever.
Oh my god, are you pulling the Richmond card?
I'm pulling the Richmond card. How do you like these apples? Okay, if you say this thing, which doesn't mean anything, I'm never talking to you again.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy.
Oh, Christ, I'm not looking forward to it, but can we do the box office game?
I'd love to do the box office game. Let's absolutely sink our teeth into this BO, my friend. Now, never let me go. The year is 2010, as you well know. We've been discussing it. There's a huge array of actors on the set here. Let's, you know, talk about the money now. Budget brackets estimated for this movie. What are they spending on a dosser like this?
Well, not much. It's a low budget. It's a Brit flick.
Uh-huh.
Sure, they've got the cast, but not much. $15 million?
I mean, it is that's bang on the money. It's $15 million is what they spent on this movie. Brackets estimated, but you have also brackets estimated it, and this is completely dead accurate. You know, Snake Eyes, my friend. Congratulations.
Snake Eyes is bad.
No, well, it's just two eyes.
Snake Eyes is bad.
No, the snake eyes always get the kill. If the snake didn't have eyes, it's not catching any voles, mate. And this vole you've got here is one of the juiciest fucking voles I've ever seen in my life.
No, you say
never before
full
have
house.
I looked at a vole and thought this vole looks juicy and tasty. But this one I'm looking at now, I want to swallow it down in one whole go. I don't want to use my teeth at all. You know what I'm saying?
Just say I don't know, Flash or Full House next time.
Full House. Oh, Full Thanks. House. Bingo.
Great. Yeah.
Snake Eyes. Now, opening weekend, US and Canada, September 17th, 2010. You know, I'm about to turn 20 years old. Not far off. What do you think this movie took?
The question is, does it break a mil?
That's a question.
I don't see the Yanks. No offense. No offense, Yanks. I don't see you turning out for such highfalutin fare.
Sure.
When's it come out again? What month?
September.
When wake me up? When September?
Mother's in my pants again. The fucking war will never end. Wake me up when the song is over. Man, has there ever been a band that has fallen from a fabled height greater than Green Day? Can you remember this?
Weezer,
when Green
maybe
Day,
Weezer.
When they went good, when they went mainstream, and then everyone was like, I can't believe where they've fallen from. Like, mate, did you listen to the old stuff? It was fine. Get over it. They were always a mainstream band. I won't have this thing where Green Day weren't a mainstream band. They were just mainstream in the 90s when that meant doing cool stuff like Dookie. And then in the 2000s, when it meant being more like Avril Lavigne, that's what they were. They didn't betray anything. They did exactly the same thing. You're the one that changed, you fucking idiot.
Don't wanna be an American idiot. It's made $900,000.
It didn't, unfortunately. It made $111,000.
Oh, Jesus. Is that in your opinion or is that a fact?
Oh, that's a fact, man. Ugh. That's a fact.
That makes
sense.
If
we're being fair, it made nearly $112,000, but I don't think that makes much of a difference.
No, that's fine.
Hey, gross worldwide. What do you think about gross worldwide? Because, it's a stinker. It's a real stinker opening weekend.
No, just in America.
That's true. In US, and you're absolutely right. Does the gross worldwide, does it belie that figure or does it reinforce that figure?
I think this...
And we know we can't use the 10X guidance here because it's a British film. We know that doesn't work.
It just doesn't work anyway. I would never...
Sure,
never
it doesn't work in this
it.
Situation. Sure, yeah.
This kind of flick... it's never spending the same... It's not going to spend the same budget on marketing. It doesn't need to make double its money.
What does it need to make?
I don't know. Just its budget.
Better use of its actors, or...?
It's going to travel well.
Make a change to its screenwriter? What does it need to make?
It's got a poster. It's got a cast. It's going to make its money back. And
something of any value?
$25 million.
It made $9 million, $9.9 million.
You joking?
No, it's a stinker. It's a big, big, fat stinker.
Oof.
Yeah. It lost money.
No wonder Mark Romanek never got to work again.
Do you know, the only thing that lost more money than the film Never Let Me Go, Adam, was the lowercase sci-fi concept of a healthcare system that could afford to grow living clones.
It's time to do the feature where we pick next week's film, Joe.
Oh yeah, okay.
So it's my turn to say
yes, it is.
A list of films. Mm-hmm. This is the bit of the show where one of us reads out a list of movies they forgot with the hope of catching out the other one, and then if we do, that's the film we do. The stakes have never been higher. You can only say out five films. And if if I don't get Joe out in five, we're going to go to the communal list. You don't. Some people think the communal list, Lewis Reed, he doesn't believe the communal list exists, but it does.
Right. It definitely does.
It definitely does. Because for the 100th episode, which is nearing...
It definitely does.
The 100th episode, we are doing a communal list special.
That's right.
Well, we might do it sooner if I can't catch Joe out.
It definitely does.
Don't let Joe get in your heads. It exists.
Yeah. For sure it exists.
But anyway, I'm going to read out some films.
Hit me.
And Joe's going to say, I'm not in the mood to do that one. Can I not do that one?
Listen, man, the way to get me is to pick happy, uplifting films that feel fulfilling in your life, yeah? Not miserable things that, like, would be like the Netflix Black Mirror episode that I don't want to watch. Come on, hit me.
Well, fuck, I haven't got any of those. Dogma?
Bingo, bango, bongo. You've nailed it in one, my friend. I mean, let's be honest. It was a gimme
because you knew this before.
I've said this. I'm on the record as saying you could get me with Dogma.
Yeah, because you.
So
tried
it's
to
not
get...
like I don't want other people to think that like this is somehow like a plum and a what was that cricket term you used to use? A golden plum.
It's not a golden duck.
It's not a golden plum.
It's not plum because
no,
you
it's
tried
plum.
To...
It's plum, but it's not a golden duck.
I don't think it's even plum because you tried to get me on it. It's not plum.
Well,
because I don't think enough people saw it at the time for it to count.
What? Dogma?
I think a certain number of people need to have seen the film, the aforementioned film in the first place for it to be plum. You forgot. It's plum. We forgot.
Right.
Sure.
Do you know what I think?
What do you
think? Do you
want
to know what I think?
Tell me.
I think I've found in editing these episodes recently that when I get this far into it, I want the episode to end as soon as we've said the name of the...
Well, I don't.
Oh.
No, seriously, like, I want to interrogate the...